begins Vehimikech Nasayim Yamin, in sentence one, that it was the end of 2 years. And Pharaoh dreamt, Vehine Amed Alayor, and he was standing by the water. Now, before the dream of Pharaoh, the Malbim notes that the language should really say that there was a dream to Pharaoh, but it says that Pharaoh dreamt. It should have said, Vayachalom Pharaoh, that Pharaoh dreamt, but it says, rather, the name Pharaoh before, Upharaoh Cholem, and Pharaoh dreamt. So it seems that the dreams that Pharaoh had, it wants to specify the fact that it was Pharaoh who had the dream. What is the emphasis in Pharaoh? That the future of Yosef will be determined by the dream of Pharaoh. Yosef felt that his future would be determined by the dream of the Sarah Mashkin and the Sarah Ophim in last week's Sedra. Indeed, he put his whole hope in this. It says that Yosef mentioned to them, Zechartani, to remember me. Please, you should remember me. So the last part of the chapter in sentence 23 read, V'lo zochar Sarah Mashkin es Yosef vayishkacheyu. The Sarah Mashkin did not remember Yosef, so Rashi says that day. Yosef says, Kim Zechartani, please remember me. So it says he didn't remember him, Vayishkacheyu, and he forgot him. Later he forgot him. Why? Because Yosef put too much emphasis on him remembering him. Because Yosef asked him, pleaded with him, as if his entire future is dependent on this dream. And the Medrash says that Ashrei HaGever, Asher Som Hashem Miftacho, Rashi quotes, that blessed is the person who puts his faith in God and he doesn't turn to the arrogant and he doesn't put his faith in the Egyptians. So the Chazal saw that by the emphasis of Yosef emphasizing in the dream, when does he ask for him to remember him? Because in the middle, as the Sar HaMashkim, I'm going to go back to that, as the Sar HaMashkim interprets, tells him about his dream, so he says in sentence 14, chapter 40, sentence 14, it says, Ki'im zechartani itcho kasher yitavloch. He says to the Sar HaMashkim, to the butler, the wine bearer, that you should remember me with you kasher yitavloch, when it is done good to you. And you should speak to me kindly, v'hiskartani, and you should remember me to Pharaoh. So why does he say, what did they find wrong with that? One would think that, as we'll shortly see, the dreams were placed there by God, and it was a phenomenon. We'll see pretty soon that the interpretation of those dreams were really a phenomenon. It was out of the ordinary. So one would think, that's the old story, you know, that God sent him, like we always bring down the example, the parable. God sent him the opportunity to grab onto. And this happens even in a normal way. Every normal aspect is also a miracle. And we always mention with the flood, you know, he said, I sent you a helicopter. Remember we said the story. I sent you a helicopter, the one that prayed that God's going to save him for the flood. He's standing in the water, came higher and higher, and he's up in the roof, and the people are floating by, and the canoes come on. No, I have faith in God. And then the helicopter, come on, I have faith in God. No, it didn't help. So he comes in Yenneville. So he asked Tynus, he had faith, and nothing happened. He said, what do you want? I sent you 5 canoes and a helicopter. I mean, the miracle could happen that way. So, I mean, he sent him here to Sarah Mashkim. He sent him here to Sarah Ephim. He saw the miracle happening, so what's wrong with that? Yet, it seems that some Bali Musa emphasized the fact that he mentioned twice, Zechartani and Vehiskartani. In the same passage, Yosef emphasizes twice, remember me, please remember me to Pharaoh. What is that? Once is enough. When one has betochen, and if he's only God's messenger, so you're not really the best. So if you tell him twice, he'll remember you more. We find this theme throughout the Chumash. We find, for example, some say that when Moshe hit the stone, he's supposed to speak to the stone, he hit the stone and the water came out. So it says really he was supposed to, according to Rashbam, he was supposed to hit the stone. That's why God told Moshe to take the staff. But it said, Vayaches Asela Pamayim, he hit the stone twice. Why did he hit the stone twice? Water wasn't going to come out from the stone because he hit it. It because it was a miracle of God. And he follows God's words. So one should be enough. The same thing, we find a similar thing by Dina. It said in last week's, a few weeks ago in the Sedra, that Dina, we know, was ravaged by Shechem, a terrible matter. So it says, why did this happen? So there are many reasons, but one medrash says because Yaakov Avinu did not want her to marry Esau. So therefore, lebikish, lenosi, lemohol, to one who was circumcised, so she ended up in the hands of one who was an orphan. So now, how could you blame Yaakov Avinu for not wanting to have Esav, I mean, as an Eden? He wouldn't want to have him as a son-in-law. So, I mean, what did he do wrong? So the Medrash says, what did Yaakov do? He hid her in a box. And therefore, it says the 12 sons, Rashi brings down, they all passed, the 11 sons passed by Esav. Where was Dina? So it says he hid her in a box. So they ask, well, what else should he have done? That's the proper thing to do. But yeah, but he banged in two nails. It would have been enough, one nail. The idea is that there's a certain amount. You know, you got to hide her in a box. You hope for Ben Shlail. You buy one nail. It's like the one that bought a lottery ticket. I mean, if his old, so what's the, but one lottery ticket or two lottery tickets? You only have to have the tickets or God should bless you. So it's enough for one. So the idea is this shows the same theme. It says, Kim Zechartani. So he put his trust in a little bit in his efforts and also in the efforts of another person. Now therefore it says twice in sentence 23, Velezoch asar mashkim es Yosef. Again it says he didn't remember him. Vayishkocheyu, and he forgot him. So this is almost to complement the twice Zechartani. First, he didn't remember him. That means he said, remember me right away. So he figured there are more important things to do. But not only that, Vayishkocheyu, he actually forgot him. And who's Yosef? What's Yosef? I mean, he forgot the whole story. He had to have something to jar him. So really, Yosef, but it was wasn't that part of God's plan? It was part of God's plan that Yosef should interpret their dreams. Yeah, but not that he figures it's all finished, now I can do it myself. You don't know what stage of God's plan this is. The fact is, God planned that Yosef should be saved through a dream. But Uparo Cholem, the dream that was going to actually save Yosef, is Paro's dream. That was only a preliminary phase, and Yosef put too much emphasis on this preliminary phase. So that's why they say that the emphasis is Ufaro Cholim. Of course the person has to do this. Now, we know Pharaoh's dream. We'll come back to his dream. But Pharaoh was very disturbed. So look at sentence 3, not sentence 3, but when the Sarah Mashkim in sentence 9, right? It said there in sentence 8 that Pharaoh was beside himself. He called all the wise men and all the magicians and spiritual leaders of Mitzrayim, and nobody was able to interpret the dream. So the Sar HaMashkim spoke up. So he spoke up and he said, my sin I remember today. Paro Kotzav Alavoda. Pharaoh became angry at me and he put me in the Beis Sarat HaBochim. He put me together with the Sar HaEfim. And we had a dream and each person dreamt Pisroin Chaleme Cholomnu. He dreamt the Pisroin of the Cholom. Now, there are two types of dreams. There's a dream sometimes that it's an allegorical dream, meaning that you have to say that this relates to something else, or this personifies something else, but it's not actually in the dream. Or sometimes, Kepisrein Chaleme Cholomnu, you find the answer of the dream in the dream itself. He says, our dream, it was there in the dream. It wasn't something like, see, they had been answering like the Medrash, the seven cows have to do with seven daughters or seven tribes. But here, the Chaleme, in the Cholom itself, he was able to see the dream. Now, they had, according to the Malbim, they had a fantastic dream that they had. When you relate back to chapter 40, it says there, it's worth just going through. It says there, if you look at 40, sentence 1, there were two sins that were committed there. The story was that the Sar HaMashkim, the wine bearer, the one who served the wine, and also the chief baker, they both trespassed against Pharaoh. What was the trespass? There was a fly in the wine, and there was a piece of wood or something in the bread. Now, who did the greater chet? Who is the Sarah Mashkim? Sarah Mashkim and Sarah Ofim. We have Mashkim and Ofim, Sarah Mashkim, Sarah Ofim. Now, Sarah Mashkim means the one who's in charge. He is the head chef. But really, in Pharaoh's eyes, he may be the head chef. He brings it in to serve him. But he's just one of the common servants. I mean, but among the servants, he's a big man. And then you have the Sarah Ofim. Can't blame him. When he brought in the bread to Pharaoh, he didn't bake the bread. One of his underlings baked the bread. So if they found a hair in the bread or a cigarette butt, like I once found, it wasn't the fault of the Sar or Ofim who's delivering the bread. It was the fault of the baker that's working in the kitchen. He wasn't clean. He didn't take care of himself. The Sarah Mashkin, it's more of a chance that he could find and say it's not his fault either, but when he's delivering a cup of wine, he could see a fly that's moving the wine. So in a sense, he was also negligent. So when you speak about negligence, the negligence of the Sar HaMashkin is greater than the negligence of the Sar HaOfi, because here he himself was the one. So now, Pharaoh, it says in sentence two there, it says, Chotu Mashke Melech Mitzrayim. Mashke meaning one of the workers in the beverage department. Veha Ofer, and the baker, one of the bakers in the kitchen, so they sinned. La Adonehem, they sinned to their master, and they sinned Lemelech Mitzrayim. First of all, they sinned to their master because the chief butler is going to carry the responsibility for his underlings. And also, ultimately, they sinned Lemelech Mitzrayim. Pharaoh didn't get angry at the fellow working in the kitchen, didn't understand any Egyptian. He got angry Al Shnei Sarisov and his two masters. In sentence two, Al-Sar HaMashkim, the Al-Sar HaEfim, because they bear the responsibility. And he got more angry on the Sar HaMashkim, although it's more of an accident for a fly to go in than a piece of wood in the bread, yet that's for the fellows in the kitchen. But for the person serving, the fly is more obvious. So therefore he got angry more so on the Sar HaMashkim than on the Sar HaEfim. So then he placed them where Yosef was there, and then it says there that they became acquainted with Yosef, and in sentence five, they had a dream. And in their dream, they had the dream in one night, and each person kepischrein chalomo, in the sense that they dreamt that which happened to them. Hamashke ve'oefe. All right, so now Yosef saw that they were, in the morning, Yosef saw they weren't well, they looked a little disturbed, right? Not only were the princes in the jail, but also the underlings, the Mashke and the Ofer, their workers in the kitchen, they were also put into prison. So he says, Ishke Pisrein Chaleime, the dream that they had would have really been suited if it went for the underlings, the Mashke and the Ofer, not for the Tsar. Why? Because the dream that they had, one would come out alive and one would come out dead. And we said, if you're dealing with the people in the kitchen, the greater chet was the baker. If you're dealing with the sorim, with the chiefs, the greater chet was the mashke, the butler that was serving the drink. Now, it came out that the dream ended, that the serving the drink, he would be saved. And the other one would be put to death. So the solution of that dream really would be more appropriate for their underlings, because there, the one who served the drink was not as guilty. But when you're dealing with the sorim, it was to the contrary. So he emphasizes in the passage here, each kepisre chalomo, they each dreamt what would happen, but it should have been hamashke v'hoefe, that dream would have been more suited for the underlings, because then the mashke was less guilty, the butler that served the wine was less guilty. But then it turned out that Yosef came to them and they told him the dreams, and he says right away, Lelekim Pisrenin, Saprunoli, which is of interest. He always says that the dream is not my interpretation, it is God's interpretation. He says this to them, he says it also to Pharaoh, because it's my, first of all, it shows his faith in God. A lot of times it's smarter to do that too when you're dealing with totalitarian regime. Because, I mean, don't give me the blessings and don't hold me responsible. But he says that this is all God. So now he told them, what was the dream? The dream was there were three Sarigim Kiparachas also Nitzo. Hivshilu Ashkele Seo Hanovim. What does he say in sentence 10? In sentence 10, I saw in my dream there were three really Geffen Lefonai. There were vineyards. There were plain stalks in the vineyards, plain branches. But in the branches, there were three Sarigim, and all of a sudden, they were empty, like in winter. But all of a sudden, it blossomed forth, and it came alive. Ashkele Seo Hanovim. There came out on there, there came out grapes. And all of a sudden I see that Pharaoh's cup appears in my hand in sentence 11. So I took these grapes that appeared and I squeezed them into the cup. So now what does Yosef see in that dream? According to the Malbim, he sees barren twigs on a vineyard, on a vine, which means his career is over, that he's destined for death. And that really is the way it should have been. Miraculously, all of a sudden, there came forth grapes and it appeared the cup, meaning that his life will be saved, although it shouldn't have been saved because he was the greater sinner of the two, the Tsar Mashkin, yet his life will be saved. This is what Yosef saw in the dream. Then the Tsar Ephraim, if you take a look at sentence 17, oh, so Yosef tells him, now Yosef tells him in sentence 14, the whole reason that this happened, why did you get such a dream? He says, this happened really against the normal procedure. The normal procedure is you should be put to death. But this happened because you're supposed to remember me. God made it that way. Kim zechartani, because this miracle in the dream happened because you'll see that you're supposed to remember me because I was harmed for no reason. Gunav Ganafti. That's why he brings this in the middle, 14 and 15. He's interpreting his dream. Why does he, all right, you could say he's interpreting his dream. He says, have compassion on me. But he gives him the whole history in sentence 15, Ki Gunav Ganafti. He means to say, I was wronged, and therefore I'm here not correct. So God went ahead and he made a different future for you just for this purpose, that it should make an impact upon you and you should remember. That's why the Medrash says later, "V'leizochas armashkin vayishkocheyu," that like the Malach, God kept on making him forget. What does it mean to make him forget? Normally, if a guy did you a favor, it's a small thing, you'll remember. But over here, it was so blatant, so obvious, you'll forever remember. So he needed some exterior force, in a sense, which would press him to keep on forgetting and to subdue it and put it back in his mind. That's the expression, Vayishkocheyu. Now, the baker saw that things are going good, so he comes along in 16, and he has a dream, Saleh Chere Areshi, that I have on my head, I have these packages, these baskets, and the top basket, you have beautiful pastry and everything that that belongs to Pharaoh. So that would be fine. That would mean that what? That he's back in business again. He's going to serve Pharaoh. Yet, and that should be because it wasn't his fault what they did in the kitchen. Yet, but a bird came along and the bird ate from the sow. Now there's the old story. I would add a little observation of my own that what was the bad symbol here? Mainly the grapes before we knew it was a symbol of life, but why is this a symbol of death? Because the oif eats from the dead person. Why does he eat from the dead? Because he's not scared. It's a story that a father took his son into a museum and he shows him a beautiful picture. And he shows him a picture of a person hand holding a cluster of luscious grapes. And he sees a bird fly through the window and fly right over to the grapes. So he says, look how real and how actual that picture is. It's even fooled the bird. The bird is eating, because he eats the grapes. So he says, no, it didn't fool the bird, because if it would have fooled the bird, if it would have been real in his eyes, he would have been afraid of the man holding the grapes. He wouldn't have flown up. The fact that he went to the grapes is that it really wasn't real. So here also you could say, when he's holding the baskets, the eif is chirping himself, if this person was alive, then the eif would be afraid, would come to go ahead and to take from the bread on top of the basket. The fact that he took from the bread on top of the basket, I would add, shows that he's really a dead man in the eyes of the eif. So therefore, Yosef saw in this dream, it was contrary, the whole thing was contrary to what it should have been, because the chet, the sinner, was greater in the case of the Saramashkin. So now when he speaks here to Pharaoh in chapter 20, in today's chapter 41:9, if you notice, he first starts out in 41:9, by Daber Saramashkin es paro eschato ai, ani masker ayin. That means not just that, as you commonly interpret it, that I'm really concerned, kato ai, for my sins. Of course he was a sinner. But he says, I still realize how my life was saved, that I was the greater of the two sinners. But you did, what did you do? You put me in the Mishmar, right? And it says, Kein hoyo ose, in sentence 13, 41:13, osi heshival kani the oso tola. It happened the way he interpreted the dream. Osi heshival kani the ose tola, meaning that contrary to what should have been. So this person, you see, is not just that he happened to read the dream well, he understood human behavior, he understood psychology, he realized we dreamed this. No, but that was mamish a miracle that this person went ahead. So that's why he told him that eschato ai vishom itonu. If you notice the way he describes Yosef, there is a young boy, Nar Ivri, in sentence 12. Rashi notes already on sentence 12 that cursed are those evil people, that their supposedly benevolence, beneficence is not complete or true, because even when he's mentioning, tendency is when you want to disparage somebody, belittle somebody, you'll say, oh, that fellow there, that boy. So, I mean, Shomi Tonu Nar Ivri, a young lad, a young boy, if he's such a wise person, he did you such a favor, what are you calling him, like, insignificant, unimportant, Nar Ivri? So, Eved, he's a servant, he really doesn't even, we shouldn't even look at him, because he was an Eved to the Sarat HaBochim, to the head of the butchers. And he happened to tell us that, and it happened to come out true. So he described Yosef as being very, low on the totem pole in rank. It seemed that who was this big man that was talking? He was also a Sar, he was also an Eved. But one Eved lords it over the other Eved, the first chef over the second over the third. So the idea is that he's nobody, and maybe you could get something from him, but at the same time he had to disparage his character. Who was Yosef? The dignity that Yosef shows, we see right away the way Yosef conducted himself. As I'll explain, Yosef was a melech. In fact, the next seder it says, Vayigash Elov Yehuda. When Yehuda came forward to Yosef and they started their debate, so it says like there were two malochim, like two kings, royalty, who were grappling together, who were engaged in a dispute or in a debate. What does royalty mean? To be a king, we say, Kol Yisrael b'nei malochim hein. All the Jewish people are considered to be b'nei malochim. Because a king, what is a king? A king is a person who has confidence in himself, who realizes the importance of himself, realizes the importance of a human being, the dignity of man, and he's able to make decisions and realize the greatness, the good side of man, that man has the opportunity and the ability to make decisions. He's a tzelem elokim, he's higher level than an animal. That's what a king is, a person who's in control of himself. King doesn't mean necessarily like we have kings now, say that he has a certain amount of power. It's not necessarily power. The first thing is that he has control. And the main control is that a person has to have over himself. Now, if you take a look at the way Yosef acted, if you notice, my Rebbe, as a kind of a point, used to point this out in sentence 14. It says, Vayishlach Paro Vayikras Yosef. Paro was determined to find the answer, so he immediately went and he called Yosef. Vayritsu Minabor. They hurried him out of the pit. I mean, the Pharaoh wants to can't sleep. Vaygalach. So it says here, Vaygalach, he shaved himself, he changed his clothes. Vayavo El Paro. And they came into Pharaoh. So when they took this Nar Ivri, they didn't care what he looked like. I mean, they didn't have to They wanted Vayritzur. They hurried him up. But he wouldn't go in himself. He said, no, I can't go in to approach a king coming out of a dungeon, not having prepared myself properly. Where's the dignity and so on? So Vaygalach, he went ahead and he prepared himself. He shaved himself. Vaychalev simleisov, and he changed his garments. Vayovel amelach, and he walked into the king. They were Vayritzur min abor. They hurried him out. Didn't say they shaved him. He shaved himself. He prepared himself. Vayovel, and with the dignity that occurred because he had control. He was a different. So they tried to demean him. And really, you could just picture the greatness and the strength that Yosef possessed. But finding himself in such a situation, he still carried himself around with the proper dignity, and they weren't really able to break him. Sometimes when you read, I think it was in Sharansky's book, he describes how they tried to break him and to rob him. That's what they do in these gulags. They try to rob a person of his individuality, of his humanity, and they tried to break him. That's always what the prison tries, but no, that person had to remain like an individual with his own pride in himself and so on. This was what gave him to the power to live, the power to exist, that they're not going to break him because he is a human being. And in a sense, you see the same behavior that Yosef seemed to have in the prison here. They weren't able to break him. Now, the Malbim interprets the description a little different than Rashi. He said, here's a person who doesn't have any background. He's not a medical man. He's not a psychologist. He's not an astrologer. He's not acquainted with our culture. So if he gives us an interpretation of a dream, you can't say he uses his science or he uses his knowledge of society or the civilization that we're in. And that has some reference or some relevance into his interpretation of the dream. Because no, he's a Nar Ivri, he's a Neved, and he doesn't have anything to fall back on. He's not an Egyptian, he doesn't know anything, he's not a free man. So if he really answers your dream, it's not his education talking, there's the Greek talking, it's God's wisdom that God had given. So that's the way the Malbim interprets in the words of this sentence, that they were telling him the significance of this dream. All right, now, why was he successful? We've discussed this in the past, why Yosef was successful in interpreting the dream. There are a few important points that Hirsch mentions and others also. It says Pharaoh dreamt, that if you follow what Pharaoh told him, you see that the dream was, Yosef was medagdic, he was a good Talmudist, and he emphasized or he looked at the meaning of every phrase, of every word. It said in sentence two, you'll see that he had divine help here, because in the dream, in sentence two, it says, from the Yor, seven poros are coming out. All right? First it says, paro cholein, vihine omed ala Yor. If you notice sentence one, Pharaoh is standing ala Yor, by the side of the Yor. Now, the Yor, there are a lot of Yorus. Yor is the river, water. But Hayor is a special water, and that's the Nile that the Ramban speaks about. This because the Nile, the entire prosperity, and Egypt was the most prosperous country in agriculture. Kigan Hashem was likened to the Garden of God. We say Eretz Mitzrayim. Eretz Mitzrayim is like one step below Kigan Hashem. I mean, it is the Garden of God. So, but it was Hayor. That was the source of the entire economy, the entire livelihood of the Egyptians at that time. So that's an important point. Now, when you tell this to someone, they'll say, Alayor is just the background for the picture. Where did this take place? Pharaoh was dreaming. Where was he at? In the beautiful seashore. In fact, Pharaoh understood it that way, because a few sentences later, when he tells Yosef of the dream, he describes in sentence 17, if you'll follow back from one sentence to another, here it says in one, ala yor, and in sentence 17, it says al svasa yor, by the seashore. That means I was standing on the beach. Right? So he was standing on the beach. But it wasn't al svasa yor in the dream. It was ala yor, meaning literally on the water. That itself shows you, or right by the water. Not that the Sfas had anything to do with it. The seashore had nothing to do with it. It was Ala Yor, because the dream had to do with the prosperity, with the livelihood of Egypt that was dependent on the Yor. Now, the others that he told the dream, and they didn't have God's blessing to be able to discern, so they had to answer according to Svasa Yor, that Pharaoh was standing on the beach. So that led them off right away. The next thing he says, he has a dream in sentence 2. Seven cows come out, Yufos Mare Ubrios Bosor, Vatirena Ba'och, and they were grazing in the meadow. Now, how does he describe the cows? Yufos Mare, they were well favored, and they were healthy in flesh. Now, how does he describe, Pharaoh describe it in sentence 18? He says, Sheva Poros Brios Bosor, they were healthy, it's the same thing. Yefos Toa, they were beautiful in form. Now here again, if you're speaking about he had daughters that are beautiful daughters, or you're speaking about his aesthetics, so then you have the beautiful form. If you're talking about a cow, you have a healthy cow. So it says, Yefos Mare, you looked at the cow, you saw Gesunte cow, who cares about the form? Yet when he determined, when he gave them the story in sentence 18, it says, Yefos Toa. Pharaoh said they were beautiful in form. That's also misleading. And then afterwards it says, "V'hine sheva poros v'tamodna etzel haporos al svas hayor." The seven cows came up afterwards. Olos achareim min hayor v'tamodna. They stood right next to the poros al svas hayor. Now it leaves out that they were grazing in the meadow. You say simply because they were grazing in the meadow. I'm in sentence 3, there was no meadow for them to graze in because there was no grass. It was 7 years of hunger. The Ramban, or the Malbim, I think others say, that the fact that it's left out that they were grazing in the meadow had a second message, that the seven hungry years would be throughout the world. The seven full years were in sentence 2, the blessing of the bounty, that would be in Egypt. That's why it's Vaterena Ba'och. There will be great amount of food there. The seven hunger years depicted in sentence 3, that's already speaking about, it leaves out the idea of Vaterena Ba'och or anything about that, because that has nothing to do with what? With Egypt itself. So it doesn't attribute it to places next to Egypt. And we know that the hunger went out. Now, these are basically the questions. So Hirsch said that you couldn't expect the others to realize this. It was only Yosef who understood it, because Yosef, he was standing on the river, because the river, everything was the gift of the river. The bad cows, the way he says, were not cannibals by nature. Hunger would not have made them eat up the others had there been any food left in the meadow. So the warning was right there. The warning was there that not to eat up everything in the years of plenty. Leave over a little bit in the meadow. And if you leave over a little bit in the meadow, then the bad cows will not have to eat up the good cows. So you have the peace rain, you have the answer, the solution, really, to what the problem should be. Now, the Ramban says that the poros itself, the reason it was written, two analogies, I mean, it could have been two. The reason why it says both dreams, one after another, was that it's going to happen. If it happens, both dreams, one after another, it's an emphasis that it's going to happen quickly. But the poros, why did it have to be two different? They could have been repeating the same idea. So he says the cows signify the planting of the fields, right? Charisha. The first thing you do is you plow the fields. That's the significance of the cows. The cows are for plowing the field, for working the field. The shibolim, the stalks that come up, they signify the katsir, the cutting, the reaping of the harvest. So both of them signify that there will be prosperous years, and at the end, there will be years of hunger. So Yosef, and the fact that they happen right next to each other, so that the dream was repeated twice, so that's how he really understood that. Now, Yosef, Paro asked him, what should we do? So the idea was that since the solution was given really, I mean, how could Yosef, on his own initiative, start telling Pharaoh what the solution is? Who asked him about the solution? Nobody asked him for the solution. How does it say here that he says, let Pharaoh see, or let him get a wise person, V'ator, Yirei Pharaoh, let Pharaoh see a wise and discreet individual, and let him place this wise and discreet individual over the land, Al Eretz Mitzrayim, over the land of Egypt. Now, that's very nice, but I mean, who asked him? Pharaoh just asked him what? For the dream, right? How did he know that? So some want to learn that the fact that the dream, the way we said alluded to, that if there would be more food there, there would be someone, they wouldn't have to eat the other, you know, the full years. So that itself signified that that's part of the dream. Part of the dream was that you should provide, that you should provide the way to be able to have an ish novon, that you should try to allude to the fact that Pharaoh should be well prepared. Now, for Pharaoh to be well prepared, he would have to have a person who understands to do the following thing. Now, the emphasis of Yosef, you could say, was not an ish novon, on an understanding person, but the emphasis is on what this person should do. He says this person, in sentence 34, like Hirsch says, that this person should he should impose a fifth of a tax. Now, normally the tax would be 10%, but here he told Pharaoh that it's not a very palatable thing, because he divided in 33. He said, make a person who is totally in charge, each novon v'chocham. And then in 34, he says, you'll also have to appoint tax collectors. This each novon v'chocham, he's supposed to stay beyond the collecting of taxes, because he has to have the trust of the people and the belief of the people. The tax collector, we know, is never loved by Biavket Pekidim. So the person in 33 will say, look, I didn't say that. You can read my lips, no taxes. He has nothing to do with the ones that go ahead and Congress passes taxes. He can't help it. V'yafket pekidim v'chimei she'eretz Mitzrayim. Now, this word, v'chimei she'eretz Mitzrayim, meaning you should take a fifth. Now, Hirsch uses the, so others learn, just take a fifth, meaning you should take more. But he says, no, the fifth was special. Why? Perhaps he wants to say the following. In years of plenty, when there's a lot of food, one uses twice as much as in ordinary years. In fact, later when it says that Yosef gave his brethren lechem lefi hatov, it says he gave them bread for the children. So what is the meaning? So not that he rationed bread, but he gave them more than enough. Because you know what, a child wastes food. He takes a piece of food and then he throws it. He doesn't want to finish it, so half of the food is thrown out. But he gave them, not like in a hunger year when they would have to allot or apportion small pieces, but lechem lefi atof, as children would normally eat. So in a good year, he says, one would eat twice as much as in another year. And in contrast, in a year where it's scarce, so you get by with a half as much as you would in that way. So hence, in a year of plenty, it would come out that you would use four times as much as you would in a year of famine. Because if in a year of famine you get by with half as much as you would in a normal year, and a year of plenty you use twice as much as you would in a normal year, so in a year of famine you would use a fifth, actually, of what you would use in a year of plenty. So he says, now, in the 7 years of plenty, the chimesh eseretz Mitzrayim, let him take a fifth to put away for safekeeping in each one of these 7 years. So if he'll do that, so when you'll have the 7 years of hunger, so in each one of those 7 years, you will have enough to sustain themselves with the bare minimum. So you see that Yosef was truly a person who had economic sense. I mean, he was an economist in that sense. And not only was he an economist, as we said, he was also a diplomat, because he told them how to appoint tax collectors. But then furthermore, he says that he gave him another idea. He said later, in 47, after he was appointed, and he was actually fulfilling his obligation, so Ted Vatasa Oretz Besheva Shnei Asovo Likmotzim, that the earth produced in the 7 years of plenty handfuls, meaning normally you would have one item in your hand, so it was just overflowing. And he retained all the food that was in Egypt, and he put them in the cities. Right? The food of the fields in one city, he put in that community, meaning that in order that people should know that they'll have what to eat, psychologically it was right, when he collected the food, so he put it in depositories in that own community, in their own city. So these people then, when the hunger year would they be there, they would be able to go ahead and to have that food right there. And nobody would go and sell it, or nobody would play games with it on a higher level. That's the way it is commonly understood. And then it says, he also heaped up so much grain, at chodal lispor, ki ein lispor. Now, the Malbim says 49 is different than 48. 48 meant all kind of foods. 49 was grain that was used for transport. That means for export. So the idea was, in 48, he had food, maybe they were beans or whatever it was that he put away in order for those people to eat. But he also gathered together from the excess ad kichodol lispor, great granaries full of food to use for what? Like in the United States, for example, we have storage food that we keep stored, which is unbelievable, till it gets spoiled, and then we, you know, in order to guide the economy. So we use food also as an economic way of getting wealthy, aside from the food itself, because you need money. I mean, food, Egypt was an agricultural people. So how did they get clothes? You can't eat clothes. I mean, you can't put on beans and wear them. So the idea was, if they'll only have a meager amount of food to eat to sustain them caloric-wise, how are they going to get to keep the country running during these 7 years? Where is the national product going to come from? There is no growth next. There's no GMP, there's nothing, there's no growth, nothing is growing. So a country has to exist or subsist in something more. Now, where are they going to get the funds to be able to bring in the Toyota, bring in the import, whatever they need? They need more than just the meager food. So the Malbim learns that in sentence 49, that's what Yosef did. He got great granaries of excess food that would be used for export. And this was not in every city, but this was under Pharaoh's jurisdiction. And in that way, the country would have the money or the wealth that they would need in order to be able to exist as every country does. Ad ki chodal lispor ki ein mispor. And it was endless, ki ein mispor, that it can't be counted. Now Hirsch says, what does it mean you can't be counted? Everything can be counted, he says. Once, as soon as one has names for 1 million, 1 billion, 100 million, 1,000, 10,000. So all you have to do is add zero. But really, you can count anything. We see that from our economy, right? Things that cost a nickel now cost 50 cents.